Welcome to the Draft Doctors Fantasy Footy Podcast with your hosts, John Crockett, Steve Fizz, and the Statesman.
G'day everybody and welcome to the Draft Doctors. I'm John Crockett and tonight we are talking tips and tricks on how to win your league. And as always, is Stevie Fizz to help us out. How you doing, pal?
I'm doing okay, Jono, but something was brought to our attention recently, and I'm sorry we missed it last week. But the week before, it was brought to our attention that we deserve a strempling, Jono, because we hadn't actually strempled anyone for a long time. What do you think? I mean, I think it's a fair point. We did deserve a strempling.
I think it's fair, but I also do like to keep it during the season, just keep it fresh for the listeners. But yeah, we'll take our licks when they come our way. I'm happy to take those, cop that lick.
Yeah, just for anyone who's joined the show, I know we've got a lot of new listeners. The strempling is named after the footballer Shane Strempel, who was infamously thrown into a circle of other teammates where he was. Where they were ordered to punch up Shane Strempel with boxing gloves by the legendary coach, Mr. Robert Walls, of his Get Him in the Ruck fame. And so we every now and again throw people into the middle of a ring to get punched up. Tonight, John, I found a pretty good culprit. As the people
I think
know.
I read the same article, if you're going the way I'm thinking.
No, I'm not actually. But as you will have known, I had to move house at Halloween. Emma gave out notebooks and pencils as the trick or treat instead of candy, so we had to move. My house was just getting torn up by local ruffians, and I moved to a new area and I'm strampling my new local pizza shop. I don't think there's anything more infuriating than when you move house and you have to leave behind a good takeaway establishment, whether it's a pizza shop or a fish and chip or whatever. And you'll know, Jono, that the Heather Hill Pizza Shop is pretty nifty on the pizza.
It's right up there on the top of the list. I mean, where I live in Cranbourne West, it's hard to get a good pizza.
Heather Hill Pizza was a ripper. I've moved down to Kringle. The pizza shop, I just had it for dinner tonight, and I don't know what's going on. It's like I was eating a half-cooked cake or something. It was just a dog. It was a dog's breakfast on a pile of dough, quite frankly.
Mind you, the pizza I had there in Perth, it actually smelt like rancid meat. So that went into the bin pretty quickly.
My God, Perth.
Oh, yeah, you open up, it just smelt like rancid meat. I can't remember the name of it, so names will not be named on this show.
They name names, but, Jerry.
he has moved.
Was it Hop Sing? Was it Hop Sing?
Hop Sing.
Hop Sing. Yeah. They name names.
But he's moved house, and it looks like he's downgraded too. It kind of looks like a Vinnie's sofa there. A smaller house. I don't know if he's just in the guest house, but we welcome to you, Statesman.
Yes, I'm in one of the servants' quarters, actually. That hasn't got flooring at the moment, but that's just about to come in. Only because we're getting a fair bit done now. I'm a little bit upset. And firstly, I do need to apologise. The reason why you're not getting 70% Statesman in this week's show is we were meant to record last night, but I clearly forgot when I was actually worried about moving the house. So I apologise to the listeners, so they won't be able to cut out the other two boys as much as they normally do each week. So our listeners probably will drop a bit. But I do have an issue, and yes, this is maybe getting a little bit picky. And yes, between myself and the lesser statesman, we own a few properties here and there, and we're developing a few and that type of stuff. But I do have a real issue of what's been happening in housing development over the last 15 to 20 years. So everyone's got it into their little head that they must have an ensuite. Now, I will say I'm a bit picky when I come to this, because I need to, from the main master bedroom, I need to have a hallway that either side is a his and hers dressing room before you get to the ensuite, which are 16 different rooms. But I have a real issue, and this is me looking at properties quite regularly, where they continually build ensuites where the toilets are right next to the sink. Yes. Now, I may be getting a little bit over the top and a little bit posh and a little bit expecting too much from my properties, but I can't handle when you shit right next to where you clean your teeth. It just doesn't make sense to me, and I think they should ban it straight away. It's a health hazard, people. You can't have someone in the shower, then someone scrubbing the teeth, and right next to both of them, someone having a shit. That is a separate room. One room is where the shitter is.
Practicality. While you're taking your crap, brush your teeth at the same time, and you can rinse off and wash your hands.
See, this is strange.
How are we doing at Cranbourne West?
I would have thought Statesman had a bidet in between the toilet and the sink.
I thought it just had a servant wiping.
No, I'm not talking about my properties. I'm talking the ones I look at, because I walk into these properties and I go, no, you can't shit right next to where you scrub your teeth. It's not on. We hated this so much that one generation before us, they used to walk outside to shit. That's how bad shitting was. Now we've brought it inside, but now we might as well have the stovetop right next to where we shit, because that seems to be what we do.
Jeez, I'll tell you what, that'd make my scrambled eggs pretty easy in the morning. Drinking my coffee and boom. I don't know. I guess we'll be marking this one with the explicit tag.
Well, I've lived in houses where the laundry's actually in the bathroom as well, so I can have a shower while doing a load. It's great.
It is
doing a load and dropping a load.
Literally.
Alrighty.
Alright, moving on.
Alrighty.
If you do want to follow us on social media, we're probably going to take a drop on that. You can do that by checking us out on Twitter, where we are at The Draft Doctors or at Statesman33. Hit him up with your toilet stories, where the toilet is next to the sink or the shower, or even right next to the laundry. Who knows? But
it used to be enjoyable on a Sunday morning with the paper. You just sit there. It can't be in the middle of the hallway like they build them now. Not good enough.
You can check out the website, thedraftdoctors.com.au, and also we are on the Instagram and the Facebook. Search The Draft Doctors there. But tonight we are talking tips and tricks to winning your league. And just as first, as always, Steve, kick us off, mate.
Yeah, so the all-important tips and tricks, we do this every year. And the number one thing you'll have heard us say if you've been listening to the show for a while is you don't win your league at the draft. And I think it's as true today as it was the day we started doing the podcast, Jono. And you can certainly help or hinder your cause on draft day. There's no question about that. But throughout the season is where champion teams are made. Using the waiver wire correctly, trading well, working out which teams are good to stream players against, this is where it's all at. So many things happen during the season. Injuries. Who steps into the role vacated by an injured superstar like Sam Doherty? Role changes. We saw James Sicily go from absolute irrelevance to superstar last year. Prospects emerge and come out of nowhere with incredibly low draft rates like Alex Witherden and Ryan Burton. Picking up these guys is instrumental in getting a flag. And of course, it goes the other way. It's cutting ties with players you liked who are dropping off. We saw Jack Stephen, Adam Treloar, and Dan Hanbury all move more outside last year, and their scores went down. We saw Robbie Gray get planted forward. If you were on that on trend early, you're able to trade him out and get some serious value. Others might not be automatic best 22 players anymore. I'm talking your Bernie Vinces. They might just be on the outside of the team. Other players are carrying injuries through their form. So just staying on top of situations and trends and being aware of what's happening and making the moves to your roster. I think, Jono, last year I counted it in our league of record. From the 22 players I drafted, I had 7 left at the end of the thing, at the end of the season. I finished second on the ladder. And I couldn't have done that if I didn't use the waiver wire and trade correctly. I drafted some good players, of course, but I also drafted a fair few duds, like we all do every year. Those late draft picks are low equity picks. You tend to churn them over through the waiver wire pretty regularly. So certainly you do not win your league at the draft.
No, absolutely correct, gentlemen. Although I still love draft time, I must admit. And I'll be celebrating whether I know I'm in the top four or not, depending on whether I think I've got those value picks right at the end. But you're spot on, and I look if Statesman winning the premiership team, winning the premiership in the keeper, if it actually wasn't for Kelly, Hodge and Boyd, who were really late pickups for me in that defensive line, I wouldn't have won the premiership. So no matter how well I drafted, and I thought I drafted pretty well, at the end of the day, it was the waiver wire that got me across the line. And Ryan Burton was also on the defence, so four out of the five defenders were actually picked up off the waiver wire.
Yeah, that's right. And also another little tidbit is on draft day, don't rock up six cans deep like you did, Steve, this year in our league of record, where was it three rucks in the first 10 or 12 rounds?
after making a clear statement prior to that, that you pick up your ruckman late.
Jono must have had some of those, had six cams yourself, because we all know I didn't draft any rucks in the first 10 rounds, but it was a heroic performance to then sink another eight cans within the first 10 rounds. But one of those three ruckmen, my round 22 pick, was Matthew Cruiser, who started out terribly and missed two games, I think. One game or two games. Started out terribly and missed a couple of games. So I dumped him. And guess who picked him up, Jono? The championship team.
That's it.
Who also had Ryan Burton as well. So there it is.
Wow.
Absolutely.
But drafted Ryan Burton pretty mid to late as
well. So correct me if I'm wrong. You're just saying that you put Matthew Crozier, the number one ruckman of the year, on the waiver wire.
Yep. He was averaging like 78 after the first 5 weeks and wasn't even in the team.
Sorry. Who did you keep?
Steph Martin.
Was it Cox?
Steph Martin. Sauce Jacobs.
Oh. I traded out Sauce Jacobs for Luke Parker.
That's okay.
Yeah, it's not bad. Not bad. What are some of your tips there for winning your league there, Statesman?
Well, I need to go with the trading because I love trading, although I must admit I'm starting to not enjoy trading as much as I once did. And the main reason is the amount of time you spend dealing with wasted trades. And this is people sending you, I want your Patrick Dangerfield and I'll give you Grant Birchall. This is, and then they'll give you a great story of why it's worthwhile. The bottom line is 90% of the traffic that goes out there is actually just not even worth for discussion. And what's really annoying when you actually send what I call the win-win trade as a win-win trade option, they actually turn around and go, no, because all of a sudden they don't want to trade anything that they believe is value. Well, the point is, a win-win trading model is about you need to give up something valuable to get something valuable. Now, we'll say, and people will have an opinion on this, but I traded Lockie Neal to receive Lockie Neal, and I traded away Sam Doherty. Now, I believe Sam at that time was at his absolute peak of his value. He's never going to be considered as high. It's the one-off season that he's going to have at 116 average. He's never going to see that repeated. Unfortunately, I didn't know, nor did Jono, when we did this trade, that he's going to do an ACL. That's out
of
everyone's control.
That's part of the parcel of trading and the game.
Absolutely. But I calculated that I had a pretty good defence. I had Callum Salem. I had Lukey Hodge. I had Ryan Burton. I felt pretty comfortable with the way things were going. And I thought I lacked a captain option in the midfield. And I wanted to look at long-term options. And Lockie Neal is that. He's the 110 average player. That's what he's going to be for most of his career, where Sam's going to be the 95 to 100 defender. They are worth almost the same. And I talk about a forward and a midfielder that is all, sorry, a forward and a defender that is always going to keep that status, especially in a keeper league, is worth about 15 points below what a midfielder's worth. So if you get a 110 midfielder, you should be swapping a 95 defender is basically what I'm saying. It can range between the 10 and 15, but it's just the good way to look at it when you're dealing with. So we'll talk about Isaac Smith a little bit later in the show and where I see his value from last year to this year. But they're the type of things. There's no way Lockie Neal's going to lose midfield status, and nor is he going to stop playing in the midfield. And Sam may lose defender status, but once their midfielder group come through, I think he's a defender for life. I truly do. So a win-win trade is very hard to match, but if you seriously want to trade to improve your team, make sure you are willing to share something that's got some value. Otherwise, you're wasting your time.
Yeah, and also...
And if people are willing to buy it, it's not a league that people that listen to this show should be bothered to be playing in.
And also part of that trade, you offered in Jared Lyons because you thought he was steak knives as well, and I threw up Josh Thomas, and I think you delisted him. So
Yep. So basically Jared Lyons for Lockie Neal. Good trade, mate. Well done.
Yeah, love it. Love it.
just quickly on that trade, I actually think Doherty being out for the year, it's interesting because there was always a chance that going into next year he might be a midfielder, but I think now
correct
these other midfield pieces are going to develop, so he will just keep defending forever. But one thing I would say, Statesman, on the win-win trade is I think people too often when they're trading, they aim for a player and they always aim for the big dogs like your Dangerfields or your Dohertys or whoever. And when you're trading, I always think that if you look at your team, you should be able to identify a weakness and go, well, I might need a defender. Well, instead of going for Sam Doherty, let's look for the team that matches up where my strength is. I might have an extra forward. Well, I'll look for the team that's got some defenders that might need a forward. Or if I've got an extra midfield, I'll look for the team that's got an extra defender that might need an extra midfielder. And then I'll look for someone who's actually tradable. Whether it's a star who's down and they're on the cheap, or whether it's just a middling player and we can balance each team. I always think it's really annoying when people are trying to trade for the big dog.
Yeah.
People are reluctant to give away the big dog.
Mind you, I say I work the other way where I like selling the big dog. I sold Dan Hand and Sam Doherty this year, and who were my pick. First two picks, first pick and second pick, which was 12 and 13, draft pick 12 and 13, traded them both and ended up being the premiership team.
And,
because I think they've got so much more value.
And that way you can get more in that a 2-for-1, 3-for-1, 3-for-2 type scenario. So you're building a deeper roster where that
other team... I had depth.
Exactly right. And that one other team's just getting that one star who could get injured like Sam Doherty did and their stuff.
Yep.
I'm just trying to say for helping the people out there who are in the leagues that we always get messages saying our league doesn't trade or we can't get trades done, or, you know, I just think people just shoot for the big dog too often, the Dusties, without offering up something big in return.
Yep, correct.
And it's also about overvaluing people as well. People put a print, like first pick, you've traded out Neal and Doherty. Don't put a premium on them. They're worth something to somebody.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so you can just name a price, make it fair. Don't just go, here it is. Especially when approaching someone for a trade, just don't go, here's a trade, accept it. Start a dialogue with them. Ask them how they are. Butter them up. Just butter them up. Ask them how their day is. And then go, would you be interested in trading this for this? And work your way up to it and come up with options. Just don't put it in their face and expect them to do it.
Absolutely.
They're just going to get pretty shitty. Because we can swear now, this is great.
Oh, sorry.
They're going to be shitty when it gets rejected anyway.
Sorry, can we have a total? Are we only allowed to say shit 142 times in this episode?
Yeah, it's like the South Park.
I think we've got three left.
You remember the South Park where they had the little counter going in the corner?
Yeah.
It is Christmas time. Have a shitty one. Oh, Christmas. Merry one. I mean, merry one.
The tip I want to talk about for winning your league is tiering. We have spoken about it a couple of times on the show. So basically what tiering is when you do your rankings, you break down each of your lines into groups. So if you have your midfield group, you might have your first three midfielders as Danger, Dusty, and Tommy Mitch. You can put a line through those three. So that's your tier one. Then your next tier of players could be Fife, Kelly, and Rocky. And then you're moving over to your forwards. You've got Menegola, Billings, and Heaney as your first tier. And then you got Franklin, Toby Green, Tommy Lynch, the handsome Tom Lynch, in your second tier there. And for defenders, you got Rory Laird and Zach Williams in your first bracket. And then you got Hibbert, Hurley, and Howe in your second bracket. All depends on how you like.
Is this Supercoach? Can I just
it's
go
just
back?
It's just an example.
It's an example.
I understand that, but I just wanted to hear what our tier one defenders actually sound like this year, because we've actually heard a lot. Who
Hurley,
was first?
Hurley is actually the number one ranked Supercoach defender.
Oh my God.
Yep.
I might retire before 2018 start, because everyone's talking about how we're going to lack forwards.
Oh, it's crazy.
There's heaps of forwards out there.
There's a lot of forwards.
But defenders, that sounds pretty thin. I know it's a sort of changing of the guard a little bit, and Sam out probably makes a little bit worse, but God, that's a bit thin on the top line of defenders.
There's still some quality out there, but you'd have to get in quick to get them.
Elliot Yeo must be in the top five.
Well, Yeo would be up there. I haven't really looked too much into my defenders at the moment for rankings, but he'd be up there.
Yo's in the top three.
Wow. So Yo-Yo ends up being reliable and a premium.
Pretty much.
Well, Yo-Yo's a problem because there's always the risk he's going into the midfield, and we know he doesn't score as well in the midfield as he does in defence. So
that's true. But when you are doing tiering, it's not about getting the best player available. It's about getting the best value available. So you might be sitting 8th or 9th in your draft in the first round, and as your people are calling out picks, you might have your first tier of midfielders there in Danger, Dusty and Titch. They're all gone. So when it comes to your pick, you've got your first tier of forwards and defenders still available, and your second tier of midfielders popped up. So you're going to go looking at your first tier of defenders and forwards there to get that best value in your draft. And the way tiering works, if you keep doing that, it actually, in theory, builds a deeper roster for your league. So therefore, you've got a bit more depth, and you can go on to trade those players out if for those with a bit weaker, or if you do have a weaker line. The benefits of crossing it out, you can see when people go on a run or a positional run. People might be drafting rucks left, right and centre. You're crossing them off. You might have a tier 3 ruckman in Jared Witts sitting there, knowing that everyone's got a ruckman now. So Jared Witts is going to be sitting there, and you can be picking off midfielders, any other position, left, right and centre, stopping these your team league mates basically from getting another player, and then building more depth in your team.
I don't know about you gentlemen, but when people start that positional runs, as soon as my turn comes, I just change tack straight away, because you actually lose your value. I don't believe that if you're second in that run that you're actually part of a run. Someone else makes it a run.
Mm. And that's where the tiering comes into it. You can see people going, well, everyone's picking a ruck now, so bang, change direction and get that value.
I reckon draft time, people start panicking.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
And that's what runs are.
Especially when you're on the clock. You've got that, 20 or 30 seconds on the clock, and you might have picked someone in front of me, and you're like, crap, who do I pick now? So that's where you got your tiering. You're calm, collected.
Correct.
You know what you've got in front of you.
Sorry, you're saying you're calm and collected, Jono?
Not on draft day, hell no. I'm sweating bullets.
And Steve, who's round 10, and he's had 6 before and then 8. So he's on his 14th beer. Is he calm and collected?
No, he's just stealing my beers by then.
Actually, that's true.
Another ruckman.
That's true. I did actually start stealing beers and buying drinks off other people. But I also did play Here Comes the Money after every draft selection I made. I was wearing the hate blockers. The sunnies were on. Draft day was a
stone cold
for me.
Glass shattering coming
stone
out.
Stone cold Steve Austin entrance music going. It was a fantastic day for me. And then when I was looking at everyone's teams afterwards, I realised I had a pretty middling team. But I had a lot of fun.
Like,
and that's what look, all about, having fun.
But thank Christ,
where'd you finish?
Second on the ladder.
Wow, okay.
Because you don't win your league at your draft statesman. I did recover strongly.
Correct.
If you are liking the show, you can check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. If you've got a couple of minutes, please do leave us a review. It really helps out the brand there. Click the 5-star ratings there on iTunes. Take a screenshot of the review. Post it to our social media outlets. We're happy to read it out on the show. And Steve, we've got some exciting things coming up in 2018.
We certainly do, Johnny. Do you want to do that now or do you want to wait a little bit?
Well, we'll give it a little bit of a tease. We've got some merch coming in 2018. Steve, it's your baby with the merch, so maybe tease the listeners with that first and then we'll release the big baby at the end of the show, I think.
Well, everything's my baby, quite frankly. In fact, you can probably hear my baby, like, in a literal sense in the other room. Baby Fizz is going off its head. Yeah, no, we've got some T-shirts coming out, so we'll be giving a few of those away. I think we'll pop them up on the website if you want to buy a Draft Doctors T-shirt. We've got a pretty sweet design made. That'll be a pretty affordable price, but we'll absolutely be giving them some of those away to some of our very loyal listeners.
And sports memorabilia, the limited edition of the Statesman signed photos will be up on the website by early January as well.
Is it just going to be the back of your head?
Yes.
Me and John are actually discussing this before, and we've actually we've contracted the people at Nutribullet, and we're going to be putting out the Statesman edition Nutribullet in shops for next Christmas. Should be a ripper.
Comes with a bottle of Pinot and some vegetables.
Hello.
Hello, oh, baby Fizz. And what's your next tip you got there, Steve?
My next tip is, look, we get a lot of questions, boys, and from the listeners, and we love you guys, and we do the show for the listeners. And one of the big questions we get in draft season is how to draft a breakout player in their sweet spot. You know, they absolutely love someone to emerge. Maybe it's a Josh Kelly from last year or whoever. And guys, they want to get them at the best value, which means they want to draft them as late as possible, but they also want to draft them so they don't want to miss out and someone else snap them up. And to me, it's a lot like picking up a girl at a party or a bar before I ever met Mrs. Fizz. If you go too early, they're sober. We're fantasy football players. We've got no game. I've got no game anyway. I'm absolutely... That's why I had to just latch on to any, you know, the lovely lady that I've got now. I just, you know. But if you wait too late, she's off her face drunk. And you're basically just Don Burke at that point, right?
Oh, no.
No one wants to be Don Burke.
And if you listening to this overseas, Don Burke is up there with Harvey Weinstein. That's the comparison.
Yeah, Harvey Weinstein, but he never produced Pulp Fiction. All right, so you want to get him in that sweet spot when they've had like two or three glasses of wine, they're chatty, you don't seem like such a douchebag. Okay, you want to make sure you get that player. So, and it happens every year. There's a bunch of hyped up players. I should know, we hype them up. All right? Yeah. So the question is, when do we get them before someone else gets them, therefore getting at their best value? And I want to give you two examples, right? You have to be able to put this person into a tier with other people, other players, who you're okay drafting in case someone else drafts that player that you really want, okay? Because it only takes one person in your draft to really, really like a player to ruin your plans for getting him. Last year, for me, it was Matt Crouch. Heading into draft season, I loved Matt Crouch, and I thought he'd be a huge value, and I was prepared to get him in round 7. He was coming off a 92 Supercoach. We're talking about a league of record, 92 Supercoach. No, he's not the greatest ball user. I felt round 7 was a really, really fair value. He'd probably be my third or fourth mid at that point. Thought that was really fair. Unfortunately for me, Jono, as you will know, in our home league, 7th wasn't good enough.
And neither was 6th or 5th.
Neither was 6th or 5th. He went at the start of the 4th round. Okay. Now, that is way too rich for my blood. I wasn't prepared to draft that. Now, in hindsight, Matt Crouch's average 110. It's been a fantastic pick. But two things happen when you do that, when you draft someone so early. Number one, you've built in all their upside. They have to go average a big score then. And I didn't see the 20-point jump happening, but it was there to happen. Someone took it, and okay, it's worked out. But also the other thing that happens is it pushes down other players to create better values for me. Like if Matt Crouch is in the seventh round, there's obviously 30 players in between the fourth and the seventh that I really like. Ollie Wines,
Bond,
one of them, Zach Williams, bunch of guys. So they're getting pushed down further and further, and I'm reaping that benefit. Okay, this instance with Matt Crouch, it worked out. There was another player, Jono, that you and I, especially you, were really, really keen on, in handsome Tom Lynch.
Yep.
In the same draft, I really liked him. You really liked him. I think you spoke, you were prepared to draft him in round three.
Yes, absolutely.
Wasn't early enough, because he
couldn't
went in
couldn't get him round, in round three.
Couldn't get him in round three. He went in round two.
By the same person.
By the same person, that's okay. But at this point, they'd built in all the upside, and we're talking guys, and it just didn't deliver. Didn't deliver, obviously.
No.
Okay, so he didn't return the value on the pick, and he missed out, and the person drafting missed out on players like Zach Merritt, Buddy Franklin. Okay?
Marcus Bontempelli.
Okay, we got lucky. Someone jumped the gun and pushed the draft value down further. Okay, so the way to draft that player that you really like is to put them in a tier with other players who, if they get drafted ahead of the player in the tiers, you're okay winding up with instead. A great example for me this year is Patrick Cripps. Coming in with a 97 average, it goes 10 under what he averaged in 2016. He did have a really bad injury score. It's his fifth season, absolute superstar. Absolutely love Patrick Cripps heading into him. I've got him ranked at midfielder 18 for Supercoach at this point in time. The five midfielders before him, Taylor Adams, Joel Selwood, Scott Pendlebury, Tom Rockliffe, and Dane Beams. If someone jumps on Patrick Cripps and I get one of those guys instead, that's fine. I'm not losing sleep over that. But I'm getting in before Gary Ablett Jr., JPK, Parker, Mark Murphy. I feel those guys might get drafted in front of Patrick Cripps. So my hope is that I actually get two midfielders out of the tier where I get Cripps and someone else, and I feel great.
Well, the way the Herald Sun and every other fantasy media outlet is pumping up Cripps, he's going to be a round one pick this year.
Yeah, it might be a bad example. Maybe I'll just talk about SPS. I love Sam Petrescu's Seton this year, but I've got him in the same range as Tom Papley, Darcy Parrish, Christian Petrarca.
Is Parrish overrated, overhyped?
For Supercoach, I think he's going to be a little bit overdrafted. Anyway, but that's my range for SPS, so I'll get him in that. But going back to the talk about how to draft that player you wanted, check the ADPs on Ultimate Footy. It gives a very good consensus on where someone's getting drafted. But like I said, that's an average. So there's obviously people who are drafting him higher than that. There's obviously people who are drafting him later than that.
Mm,
and Jono, as we were hinting before, hinting before, there's something we've been talking about for a couple of years now. It's been our baby for a long time.
And it's now coming into fruition in 2018. If you love your fantasy football and you're always sitting there, the big question is, where can I go to do mock drafts? There is nowhere to do it. You're wondering, you get a couple of friends to do it, you even just create leagues to do mock drafts. But that all changes in 2018, coming out with the Draft Doctors Mock Draft Simulator. So coming in 2018, we've got a website set up where you can go there, starting off with two free mock drafts a day, and then if you want to do more, there will be a small subscription fee attached to that. But it's Dream Team, Supercoach, everything's set up there, all the team sizes, bonsai, you can choose your draft position. So you're drafting pick six, right? The first five do it automatically, so all you got to do is pick a player you want, build a team. At the end of the draft, it'll show all the results of all the teams there, including your team. You can take a screen cap of that. You can print it off, do whatever you want. So therefore, you can analyze drafts to see how you're going and where players are going to fall coming in 2018.
Yeah, it's absolutely going to be indispensable for any serious draft player, John. I'm really excited. Like, if you want to draft... I'm pick eight. I want to see what my team looks like when I draft a forward first. I want to see what it looks like when I draft a defender first. I want to see what it looks like when I draft a ruck first. Looks terrible when you draft a ruck first. Don't worry about that.
Unless it's a two ruck league, but...
Well, that's a different story. Different kettle of fish. You'll be able to plug in all those options, you know, whatever size league you're playing, whatever size on-field structure you have. You'll be able to plug it in, free every day to use, as Jono said. Absolutely indispensable. I'm really excited. I think we're going to get some great feedback from this. You draft against our rankings, and you draft against the current ADP. So if Patrick Cripps is getting pumped up and people are taking him earlier and earlier, that'll be reflected in your drafts. It's going to be great.
Yeah, no, can't wait for it. The next tip and trick I've got is drafting on emotion and sentiment. Every year, there's a player that burns you or comes out of the clouds and takes you to glory, winning your league. And for me, a couple of years ago, that was David Armitage. Picked him up in round 21, 22. As a bench player, averaging in the 90s, came out, had a career year, averaging 107, took the team to the flag. Following year, not so hot on David Armitage. Just thinking, you look at his stats, he's never gone past 100, didn't want a bar of him. But guess what? Other people are going to have a bar of him and be grossly disappointed, as they were, because he hardly played a game and underperformed massively. But then you look at those people who took you to the promised land, and you want to draft him again, but it's a new year. It could be a new role. Everyone was hot on Todd Goldstein the year he went 130s. But guess what? That's, again, an outlier year. He was never going to do it, and he didn't do it. He actually went worse than ever before. Nathan Fife for me last year. Drafted him as my number one pick, thinking he was going to kill it coming back from that leg injury. Grossly disappointed. But guess what? It's not going to stop me from drafting a Todd Goldstein or Nathan Fife in the future. You don't draft on the past. You always draft on what's happening for next year. For 2018, draft on next year, because Nathan Fife is probably going to come out and absolutely smoke it, leaving last year's scores in the dust.
Absolutely, gents. And Armitage would have burnt quite a few. And it's why I've got that feeling with Hurley, mentioning him as a burn man last week. And I really think that is just his career high season last year. That is probably never going to be repeated, and I think there's going to be several of those. And that's why I also valued Sam Doherty as a tradable option, because I don't think he was ever going to get anywhere close to repeating the 120 as he was averaging at the time.
Yeah, it's a good point, Jono. You certainly can miss out on some serious value if you discount people. Look at Sean Higgins at North Melbourne. He's thrown out a couple of great seasons with the forward ranking. And people have been burnt by him before. But, also having the beer goggles for people who have done you good in the past. It's a wise tip.
It happens.
Yeah.
Have you got another tip for us there, Statesman?
Absolutely. I'm just going to lean towards our beautiful keeper leagues and DPPs for keepers, and people make some decisions, and we obviously have our own keeper league, which started beginning of this year. And I'm going to use one as an example, which I had several discussions about this, and it was a fair bit of a Twitter feed as well with regards to Isaac Smith. And I purely didn't rate him, and I'm more dealing with keeper leagues and people looking at maybe a bit of salary cap and stuff like that. But I just felt he wasn't worth the effort and time to put into him when he was his age, when really he's going to be a midfielder. And really the only time he's going to score well is as a midfielder. But as a midfielder, he's really only a low to mid 90s, which therefore in ranking sense, we're talking he's in the 60s, 70s in the ranks of midfielders by any stretch of the imagination. When you talk about his age and then you put him in a keeper, well, at the end of the day, he's more looking around the 100 mark of the midfielders. So it's quite interesting that we're talking about someone who has lost his DPP. All of a sudden he's a midfielder only, but we look back at our draft in March and he was taken round 7. So Isaac Smith, who's in his late 20s and very close to be turning 30, was picked up at round 7 in a keeper for a team that actually didn't play a major part in the finals. So all of a sudden, he's got a bench midfielder or maybe an M6 at absolute best that he's picked up at round 7. So I think any time that people get that midfield status that has looked like, sorry, get that DPP status, whether it be forward, ruck or defender, and they get it where the likelihood is they're going to be a midfield, then come to a keeper league, you've got to actually treat them as a midfielder only, so you're not dealing with 1 year benefit.
Yeah, no, that's a good call, because even in that round, seventh round, I was able to snag Clayton Oliver.
Wow. There you go.
There you go.
It's a really interesting one, though, isn't it? Because especially this year, looking through the forwards and that, there isn't those... It doesn't seem like there's those random players inserted like your Isaac Smith.
Yeah, good.
Which I kind of like. I think it's really, really healthy.
Yeah, except for Menegola and Heaney, maybe. Potentials to losing.
At least Menegola actually played forward.
It's true. Yeah.
Heaney's heat map for more defence.
There you go, yeah.
Well, I mean, I look at Lockie Weller. He definitely played the majority of the season as a defender, a halfback flanker. But his status is midfield because that's where he grabs the ball. And the reality is that that's going to happen a fair bit. I look at Isaac Smith, and I think we're just talking about his age before. He's 28, so he's 29 next year. So to me, his value is just way, way down. But Jack McRae and Elliot Yeo, who were forwards as well as him for 1 year, they went very early again. Jack McRae, I could probably get away with dealing with him at the round seven mark, but he actually went round three. Wow. Jack McRae went round three. So
Jack McRae, he's averaged 100 since his second year. Like,
yep. Yeah, he's a very reliable midfielder. So you sort of... You cop him sort of being around, and Elliot Yeo's going to flick between his roles forever and a day. So you're generally going to have value there. But Isaac Smith, he was the one that just stood out to me. He's too old for a keeper league. He just wasn't worth it. People win him. People got excited. People talked him up. In fact, they rubbished me for bagging him and saying they're going to be in the top six forward. And I'm going for 1 year.
Mm. Did you want to do one more round or start to wrap it up?
We'll do a round. We'll do a quick round.
All right.
Because Statesman's last point bleeds into my next point.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
No, it does. It's a great segue. Cool. It's almost like we planned this.
Wow.
We did, people.
We did.
Any professional people looking to put us on as a sponsor?
Yeah. We're very well planned.
Very well planned. What have you got there?
Recording a day late.
For your last tip and trick there, Steve.
My last tip is just that we're not as smart as we think we are. Okay? one of the things I remember last year was everyone was absolutely adamant that Brent Stan was going to be DPP. How wrong we were. Wasn't even in the team. Okay, so we're going to be off on player evaluations. Listener, you are going to be wrong on player evaluations. AFL talent scouts and team managers and list managers and coaches are wrong on player evaluations. Teams we think are going to be easy to stream against will be hard. Other teams will emerge. Injury-prone players will stay fit. Someone with a clean past will get injured. So
coaches get sacked mid-year.
So when you... Yeah, absolutely. And, a new coach, like, look at Gold Coast. Hey, what if he wants to play a two-ruck strategy? See you later, Jared. Witz, you're worthless now. Okay? These things happen. Okay? So we're just not as smart as we think we are. So one thing I'll say is, like, people who are taking into account the matchups that they're going to be facing in fantasy finals pre-draft, my goodness, that's jumping the gun. Like, if you thought last year, hey, oh, Richmond's a pretty easy matchup, how'd that work out? That didn't go down at all. Only one person here had Richmond going in the top eight last year. So that's all you need to know. That was me, by the way.
Of course. Wouldn't have mentioned it otherwise.
I don't mind planning for the buys, but I'm not drafting one player over another because they've got this perfect buy round. The DPP thing, I think it really gets you into trouble. I know when things are really obvious, like Rory Lobb, he'll definitely get ruck status. What if they have a change of heart and go with Dawson Simpson? We watched Toby Nankervis just burn out in his first year as a ruck. Why can't this happen to Rory Lobb? Like, it's these things are possible. Things happen that come out of nowhere. Well, James Sicily is a defender, and then James Sicily gets tagged during the fantasy finals.
Yeah, like, ridiculous.
These things happen. So, you know, when I say you don't win your league at the draft, you really got to stay on the ball, be aware, and just trends happen. So getting to the fantasy finals, that's good planning and good team management. Getting in the winning in the fantasy finals, there's a hell of a lot of luck in that. So just be humble, I guess. And if you're a commissioner of a league, don't veto trades. Please, do not veto trades. Like, how often do we see trades that we think are one lopsided completely flip? Like, don't be so arrogant to think that you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, you are not in control of those teams. Let the people who are doing the trades do the trades. I mean, they've obviously got reasoning for it. So just because you think it's unfair, it's not your prerogative to veto it.
Unless someone's like...
Sorry, I'd let the listeners know that any trade that Jono and Steve done this year, I just vetoed straight away. And I will say, it wasn't done to anyone else. It was just you, gentlemen. I wanted to piss you off. And it's taking you a long time. I started vetoing you in March, and it finally come out.
I thought you actually hacked into Ultimate Footy and just took Steve's name away from me being able to trade with him.
I thought you just stopped appearing on the show. That's what, you just vetoed the show, isn't that what happened?
I did apologise for last night. So.
Never forget.
Yeah, but it's just a thing. I mean, unless someone's like done an ACL and someone doesn't know, okay, and then they do a trade, that's a different kettle of fish. But, I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's right.
That's all I got on that.
No worries. My last tip is waiver wire scouting. Now, I know Steve, he doesn't get out much, so every night he's on that waiver wire for at least an hour and a half, not looking at the top 10 or 20, but he's going down, 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 seeing who the second or third string ruckman might be in a team. Prime example, Melbourne last year. Maxi Gawn goes down. Who's second string? Jake Spencer. What happens to him? He goes down. And what does Steve do? Just brings out the big gun in Cam Pedersen. Absolutely kills it for the rest of the year, averaging 90. So it's all about going deep in your waiver wire and just taking a few notes here and there, thinking, yep, he's okay. Looking at the fixture, seeing, right, Jack Darling in 3 weeks' time got a pretty good run against teams that should score well against, especially if it's over in Perth. Grab him off the waiver wire. Stash him in your team for a couple of weeks. It's all about that, and it might be having someone in someone else's team that has a good run. They're underperforming. That player might drop him for the hot ticket item of the round, like Brandon Matera was for a couple of weeks. He was just killing it, so people would have been dropping players left, right, and centre. Brandon Matera just got dropped from the Gold Coast team altogether, so and you could have picked anyone else up, and a Cam Pedersen, for example, and going on your way to getting close to winning your league or winning your league with picks like that.
Yeah, it's interesting, Jono. What you describe as a third string ruckman, I describe as Melbourne's best key forward. But also another point I want to make on the waiver wire thing is, you know, waivers usually clear on a Tuesday. Pay attention to who's been dropped. Okay, people are often dropping some serious talent. Maybe they're dropping someone in a position you need, a la Matty Cruiser, like I did last year.
Wow.
Just pay attention to those things. It can't hurt. All right, that's how I got Michael Hibbert off the waiver wire. We know he's injured to start the year. I grabbed him like that. So you get little nuggets every now and again.
Yeah, that's right. All right, moving on now to our famous top five list. Caused a bit of controversy on social media last week. People throwing...
John, I did have a question, actually. Sorry to interrupt you. Oh, we did actually have a Twitter question.
Oh, I missed that one.
No. What's your favourite or the best lawn for the backyard?
Sir Walter?
Statesman?
Yeah.
Marijuana. He just has his lawn as marijuana and just smokes it.
What's the good winter grass?
Cooch.
Ryegrass.
The cooch.
Ryegrass.
Rye?
Yeah.
Nah, I don't like rye. I don't like rye.
Cooch is a summer grass, Johnny.
No, I don't know.
I do like cooch. I actually genuinely like cooch, but it's not good for Tassie. That was good for WA. Yeah, I have to say cooch.
The best is if you've got kids or a pet, kikuyu. And if you don't, I love ryegrass. I'm all about the ryegrass life.
Does it have bindies in it? Any grass with no bindies is probably the best grass.
Buffalo's terrible. It's too. It's just like. It's like walking across a, I don't know, bowl of pasta or something.
Have you walked on my front lawn? Oh, man. So
I know spongy. What your front lawn looks like. I hate buffalo, so I try to avoid it and step on the stones.
Yeah, well, that's what they're there for if you don't like the buffalo. But on a nice hot day, just walk around with a cold beer on the cool grass. Fantastic.
Yeah, but kikuyu is softer than buffalo.
I don't care.
People, I'm a turf professional. I know
you are. I can't win this argument. But our top five, Steve. Last week we had Snacks and Statesmans, which is weird. But some people actually agreed with him on Twitter, which was...
of course they did. There's people with class that listen to this.
No one knew what pate was, though.
No, they got on the Google machine and then just dry reach when they saw what it was.
But, you got strempled, though, Jono.
I know, chicken twisties. How do they get strempled? Seriously.
I don't know.
But this week we've got our top five Aussie sportsmen of all time. So who have you got there, Steve?
All right, my top five Aussie sports people. These are my favourites, all right? So number five, we're going to start it off with one of our best ever basketball products. She almost led us to a gold medal, dominated the scene for many years, MVP in the WNBA, Miss Lauren Jackson. Love her work. Number four, Cadel Evans. You win the Tour de France, baby, you are in there. That's one of the hardest individual events there is. John, I don't know about you, but I don't mind watching a bit of the Tour de France when it
love
comes
it every
on
year.
Every year. My parents love going to France. Been to all the towns and all that stuff, so I like the Tour de France. Number
one
three.
Of those people who sit on the sidelines waving flags and knocking, just giving the riders an elbow when they come past?
Well, you could imagine what my parents are like. They just don't mind throwing a few wildly aimed haymakers out there. That's
you
all
call
right.
this a grape? Throwing in their spokes.
Oh, man, just stumbling around, pants down, dropping a beer. It goes in the family. Number three. I've decided to put a footballer on the list. And if you love in Melbourne and don't love the excitement machine that is Billy Slater, there is something seriously wrong with you because he lights it up. I'm on the edge of my seat every time he makes a run. Done it for a number of years, brought us various titles, and watched him during the State of Origin and the World Rugby something or other, whatever the hell it's called, make-up tournament. Love watching it. Number two, don't know if you guys know this player person because you're not hip enough. You're not down like a clown, Charlie Brown. But number two, Shane O'Neill, professional skateboarder. I could go on YouTube and watch this man for hours and hours at a time. Won the Street League Series events, the switch double tray flip. It's amazing. Style for days. I was a big skateboarder back in the day. Still love watching it today. But number one. Boys, if there's something I love, it's being entertained. And you can be the best sportsman in the world, but if you can add a bit of theatre, a bit of showmanship, and yes, even a bit of comedy into something that you do, you have won me over. So when you drag home...
Jackson.
Yeah, well, I was a bit young for that. But if you can bring home an Olympic gold medal and your name is Steve Bradbury, you're at the top of the tree, baby. Don't worry about that. He's created a pawn of Bradbury, basically.
Didn't he get to the final in the similar circumstances as well?
That's correct, Jono.
Yeah. I remember watching the heats and the finals and that, and yeah, twice in a row, just pure asses it, the Aussie way. Don't mind them, number one at all.
12 years of hard work, to be fair, as well, Stephen Bradbury. Sort of been at the Winter Olympics for a long period of time and made semi-finals before, so
he'd
worked very hard.
But he was six laps down, though. I was exaggerating.
He wasn't six laps. Yeah,
he was actually eating a hot dog in the crowd on the second lap. That's actually how he got so far behind. It's one thing people don't understand. Steve Bradbury, top of the list. That's another thing you've won.
Who have you got there as your top five, Stacewin?
Well, to be fair, that I've been working on moving home, so I haven't spent a lot of time, but it's quite easy to rattle off, to be fair. David Boone's number one. Ricky Ponting's number two. Roger Woolley's number three. Max Walker would be
Tangles.
Number four.
Didn't even and, know he's a Tasmanian.
And they always need to bring him in, of course. Now, obviously, we've got a great Axeman that comes from Tasmania, but probably to try and keep it hip in the crowd is I need to bring up Matthew Richardson, Brownlow favourite in 2012, and everyone wanted to get him across the line. Magnificent man, even though he's from the northwest. But we've got to give him a tick in the box and need to make sure a footballer's there.
Hey, well, they made a song out of the Richo Richo Man, so...
That's exactly right.
Oh, you should have gone for the hip thing would have been to go for the woodchopper.
Is it Ben Foster, the woodchopper?
The Foster. I know the Foster name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ben Foster. Ben Foster's his son, I do.
David
believe.
Foster's the old man, isn't it?
David, correct.
David.
No more wood chopping.
Yes.
Yeah, he's a bit of a star, the boy.
Go to the Melbourne show and you just see them just smacking through those logs. It's unreal. Love that. Love that part of the show.
I obviously wanted to put Errol Flynn in, but I can't remember whether we considered fencing as an Olympic sport at the time.
We'll do that for next week's list, top five Australian Olympians.
No, we'll do our top five songs named after an Australian.
Yes.
All right, kicking off my top five. This lady has transcended two sports, kicking it off with the Matildas, where she played in the World Cup and has scored a goal. And just recently, she knocked out a double ton against the Poms.
Yes.
That is Elise Perry. She's an absolute star. I love watching her play. I was watching her play in the Women's Big Bash on Saturday afternoon. Just a lazy 90-odd off 40-odd balls. So can hit them, the young lady. So loving what Elise Perry does. Number four for me. This bloke won an NBA championship without playing a minute, pretty much, for the San Antonio Spurs. And that's our man, Andrew Gaze, coaching the Sydney Kings, did absolutely nothing to get that ring and still still bragging about it now while he's playing over in the NBA. Again.
What's the NBA?
The National... It's the American Basketball Association, basically.
Right.
It's the second most popular team sport in the world.
So, like most of them, when they've got an A at the end association, it means that there's second tier, third tier, sort of lower level stuff. Okay.
Yep.
Good to see you rate that sort of second, third tier stuff.
Well, he was a star in the NBL for the Melbourne Tigers for many a year.
Right.
Yes. The number one tiered sporting association. number three for me is Cadel Evans with Steve. Loved watching him win the Tour de France. When he did good win it, I think I watched it every day live. Going to work the next morning was hell, but when he was winning it, it made it just that little bit better. Number two for me, it's one Shane Keith Warne. I'm talking cricketer Shane Warne, not after cricketer Shane Warne. He's the leading wicket taker. See,
hands
never
up.
Been to a cricket. You've never been to a cricket match in your life. You've.
I went once.
Once. Have you ever seen Shane Warne bowl before?
No, I don't watch drug cheats. This is coming from you, the bloke who hangs Essendon at every fucking chance he gets. Drug cheat Shane Warne.
Hey, no swearing on this show. This is for kids.
Fucking Warney.
As a cricketer, he drug was cheat. An absolute champion. I don't care.
You can't hang Essendon ever again. That's done. That's done. Yeah. Then you're a hypocrite.
Warney is a gun cricketer. A diuretic. That's not performance enhancing.
You give me diarrhea, the hypocrisy I see on the show.
second leading wicket taker. Absolute first ball ever in Test cricket. Ball of the century. Have you got a... Well, you might have a ball of the century. I don't know. I don't want to see it.
It's a left one.
But absolutely.
Who's number one?
Number one. A teammate of Billy Slater. He's the captain of the Melbourne Storm, the captain of Queensland and the Australian team. That's Cam Smith. He had a better year than Dusty. He's won 3 titles this year. A club title, a state title, and a world title. He's won the Golden Boot, the Best of Player, Dally M, champion bloke, better than Billy Slater, better than the rest. He will go down as an immortal of the game. Something none of us can ever say we will ever be, an immortal of a game.
You do realise there's only actually 2 sports. There's football and there's cricket.
No,
that's it.
Outside of Tasmania,
that's
maybe.
All there is.
In Tasmania, there may be.
All there is. Oh, no. July, there is a bit of cycling, so I'll allow Cadell Evans. Is Cadell a Benalla boy? Country Victorian boy?
Geelong. I think he's from down that way.
Okay.
Geelong way.
Fair enough.
But that is our top 5 causing controversy each and every week. And if you want to share your thoughts on our list from this week, you can do that by hitting us up on the social media, where you can find us at The Draft Doctors and at Statesman33 on the Twitter. We've got The Draft Doctors website, draftdoctors.com.au. The t-shirts will be going up there in the new year, as well as checking us out on the Facebook and the Instagram. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Draft Doctors Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review.